The mass media in our society has created many images. The image of the policeman, the image of the lawyer, and the image of the mobster. I think perhaps the image of the mobster is one of the most potent images that has been created by Hollywood throughout the years. And the whole feeling about organized crime is something that fascinates Americans. I don't know why, but it does. It fascinates me. And one particular element within the structure of organized crime that also has interested me, and I'm sure interests other people, and that is the profession of the hired killer, the hitman, the contract man, whatever you may want to call him. On the line with us right now is Joey, who is a hired killer for the crime syndicate. He is author of two books. One is Killer, and the other is Hit 29, both published by Playboy Press. And for obvious reasons, for security reasons, Joey is not in our studio, but he is on the telephone line with us. Joey, welcome to Montage.
Pleasure.
Joey, how did you get started in the work that you do?
Well, I started out as a kid in New York. I ran numbers. I started out running numbers when I was a kid. And being a little stronger than most kids, I started working, collecting money that other people forgot to pay their bookmakers and Shylocks. And then I became what they call a controller in the numbers. That's where I had a bunch of other runners working for me. And then I became a hitman.
Well, you killed your first man when you were 16 years old.
That is correct.
How did that come about?
One day a guy came to me and asked me if I wanted to do a special job. I says, what are you talking about? He asked me if I'd blow somebody away, and I looked at him, and, you know, I was kind of, you know, stunned. And I says, well, what do you have to know about it? He says, by tonight. I says, all right. And I started to think about it, and I started thinking, and I realized that if I did it, I would be something different. I would be someone different. And if I didn't do it, I would be just another guy on the streets trying to earn a living. So I decided to do it.
How much were you paid for that first hit?
$5,000.
What was your feeling when you were told who you had to kill, and how did you go about killing him, and was there any remorse? Was there any guilt at all? Or was this just, were you totally without any feeling towards the person you killed?
Well, when he told me who it was, I mean, there was no feeling as far as that was concerned. I mean, I was never even told the reason. I found out later that he'd been an informer. I mean, as far as that went, when I actually did the job, I guess I got a, after I'd done the job, I got a sense of awe, you know, that I actually did this. You know, it was kind of a funny feeling. And then all of a sudden you get a feeling of being just of tremendous power. It's very difficult to explain. And that was the feeling that I got after that. But as far as remorse is concerned, not at all.
Later in your life, your wife, who was pregnant, your first wife, who was pregnant, was beat up and eventually died as a result of those beatings. Describe that incident and how you responded to that incident in your life.
Well, I was working for a guy, and he owed me about $40,000. And he decided it would be cheaper to kill me than pay me. But I wasn't home at that time when I came to my house. And then they made what is considered a no-no in this business. They touch my family. And in this business, you do not touch a man's family. And one of the guys, when he was asking my wife where I was, he thought he'd become a hero, and he kicked her in the stomach. She hemorrhaged and died. And I didn't know about this. And a couple of days later, they caught up to me, and they thought they had killed me, but they only knocked me into a hospital for 15 months.
What did they do to you when they found you?
They broke my neck.
And what was your feeling when you found out they had killed your wife?
Pure, unadulterated hatred, and it's never left me. And when I came out of that hospital, I hunted the three men who had actually did this for 2 years until I caught them. And just recently, I got the man who gave the order.
How did you, when you found them, the three people plus the guy who gave the order, a total of four men, the revenge killing, how did you in turn blow them off?
Very slowly. I used the .22 Magnum bullets, And I started shooting him like in the legs and in the shoulders and in the rib cage. I didn't want him to die quick. I wanted him to be in pain. And I'll tell you something. This may sound hard or cruel, but I don't think I ever had as much pleasure in my entire life as when I killed these men.
Well, you talked about, you've also mentioned, and this is a quote from the book, "I never have known anything as sweet as those killings," referring to the killings of the people that killed your first wife.
That's right.
"They were wonderful sights. I could smell the fear. If you've ever wondered why an animal attacks someone who's afraid of him, it's because of the fear that just pours out of him and creates an odor. I saw it. I smelled it. I loved it."
That's absolutely correct.
In subsequent killings, Joey, do you work in the same way? Do you want to see a man suffer?
No.
Or was it just in that particular,
particular
case?
Ordinarily, I put 3 bullets in a man's head and I walk away.
Is it always in the head?
I prefer it there, yeah. Because you kill the head, the body dies.
Do people generally know that they're going to be hit by you?
No, not until I'm right there. I mean, let's face it, if a guy knows that he's going to be hit, he's going to take a hike.
One of the images, again, created by Hollywood is the fact that, you know, the black hand, that the kiss of death, a dead bird or a dead animal thrown on the front porch of the person, and that's his indication that he's about to die. Is this all Hollywood?
No. You're not going to give a man a warning. I mean, you give a man a warning, you've got forewarned is foretold.
So, in other words, once the order is given, you find the guy, you walk up to him, mm-hmm. and you pump 3 shots into his head.
That's right.
What about, don't you have to plan a getaway, how you're going to exit yourself from these areas?
I plan everything I do. I mean, it takes me, from the time I get the contract, it takes me from 5 days to 2 weeks to blow somebody away. And if you read the book, it also tells you the time I went to another city, and they told me they had everything all set up, you know, to take the guy on. I said, you don't mind if I check it out, do you? And I spent another 5 days going over there their way. No, I check everything out thoroughly.
Another image, again, from motion pictures, is that a lot of hitmen use high-powered rifles.
You have to be a fantastic marksman.
So you don't take any chances?
No, I figure if I'm within 6 feet of you, you're gone. I don't figure to miss you at that distance. But you give me a rifle and you try to tell me to pick you off at 100 yards or 200 yards, I think I'd have a tough time. And I think most other people would, too. I mean, there are people who probably could, but I don't think they're in this business.
A hitman is a specialist within the structure of organized crime. How many other men are there like you within the structure that you're familiar with?
I would have to say maybe there's 1,000 guys floating around that'll pull a trigger.
And are they called, again, we've used the term hitman, trigger man, torpedo. These are...
Torpedo is a word I think that went out when high button shoes. I would say they're known as guys that'll do a job.
You admitted to me when we set up this program the other day that you have killed 43 men.
That is correct.
When was the last time you had a hit?
I won't tell you that.
Was it within the last year?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever killed a woman?
No.
Have you ever killed a child?
No.
Have you ever killed an honest man?
Have I ever killed anybody outside of the business, you mean?
Right.
Anybody I've ever hit has been connected with the business.
In other words, you only kill mobsters who get out of line.
No, I only kill people for the syndicate. And anybody who I do gun down, he could possibly have a front of being a legitimate businessman, but he would be connected with the mob. It would have to be something that connected with the mob.
Have you ever turned down a hit?
Yeah, several of them.
For what reason?
Well, one hit that I turned down was a very close friend of mine. From the description of who they wanted blown away and the amount of money they were offering, I knew who it was, and I turned it down cold. And there's one that I tell about in the book about I got sent over by a friend of mine, which is ordinarily, he didn't even want to do it, but the party was a close friend of his, so he sent me over to a very wealthy society figure in New York. And this guy wanted this woman blown away. And I was kind of puzzled, you know, by a guy like him at his position wanting to blow somebody away, you know, who was more or less like, you know, not nothing. So I started doing a little checking, and I found out that had been keeping her, and she had the audacity. After about 2 years, she had gotten pregnant. And she didn't want to have an abortion. She wanted the baby. And she wasn't looking to shake him down or nothing. She just wanted, like, you know, like a couple hundred a week until the kid was of age, which I didn't think was a bad thing. But this guy was afraid because of his social position, his, the fact that he was a deacon in his church, and he had three kids and the whole thing, you know. And I blew my stack about it. And I went back to him and I told him, I said, hey, you're going to give this chick $100,000, and you're going to give her X number of dollars until the kid is 18. Because if not, I said, I'm going to blow your brains out. I said, I'm going to see what the whole world finds out why it happened. He didn't like it too much, but he went along with it.
Joey, in addition to hitting people, another term that is used in organized crime is a muscle man, someone who beats people up to get money back or some revenge or give them a warning. Are you involved in this type of work also?
Well, I have done it. Generally, you very rarely, when you go see somebody, you know, especially when they know, you know, they're in the wrong, you don't have too much trouble with them, very rarely.
You mentioned that you do not, that the people that you hit are people who are involved in organized crime in some way.
Mm-hmm.
What about other hitmen, and what about an honest citizen who's listening to the program today, or a crusading journalist, or a crusading broadcaster, or a crusading U.S. attorney? Are they likely to be targets for the mob?
No. No way.
Why?
You start knocking off citizens, or you start knocking off police, or U.S. attorneys, or newsmen, and you've created nothing but opening up Pandora's box. You just don't need it. They're like, you know, the untouchable, so to speak. You leave them alone. As far as citizens are concerned, what's your point? I mean, what are you going to win if you knock citizens off? I mean, they ain't involved with us. As I've stated, I don't know how many times, I can knock off 30 hoods a day, and there's going to be nice headlines, and all the things that go with it, and nothing's going to happen. But you knock off one citizen, and you're going to have martial law. And when we were writing Killer, I have to tell this to Dave Fisher, and Dave looked at me and gave me a bemused smile. And about, about a month after we had been discussing this, two innocent men had been killed in New York in a place called the Neapolitan Noodle. And you had martial law in New York for about 8 months.
So they really get uptight about that.
Oh, yeah. They get very uptight. See,
one other group of people that I would assume that many members of the mob would like to get are former members of the mob who have, let's say, turned state's evidence, and they are now federal prosecution witnesses.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, let's face it, they have violated. I mean, they've come into the mob. They have made a living out of the mob. You know, the mob didn't send for them. They came in voluntarily. They've made a living here, and they've probably made a damn good one. So in order to save their own skin, though, they're willing to dump 30 other people. You know, that isn't fair. Of course the mob would want revenge. Wouldn't you?
What about the reaction now? Is there such a thing as an open contract? Let's say there is a federal witness who's going to testify against any leading member of the mob, and I understand that these people are guarded to a degree that is like second only to Fort Knox as far as federal marshals with loaded shotguns around them at all time, and I don't mean one, I mean several, I mean 15, 20 to guard these people. Is there such a thing as an open contract where someone would be sent in to give up their own life to try to get someone like this?
Oh, no, nobody in his right mind, unless he had like a terminal disease, you know, would even think about it.
In other words, there was no kamikaze atmosphere.
No way.
So there is a degree of self-preservation for the hitman.
Of course.
Now, you mentioned in your book, though, that one of the things that's important for a hitman, or not all hitmen, but as far as you're concerned, you say in Killer, I don't care if I live or die.
That is absolutely correct. I don't care if I live or die, but that doesn't mean I'm going to walk out into the traffic and play.
But that means you would prefer to live.
I enjoy it. I'm not afraid of death. I mean, if death comes, we all die. You know, how I die doesn't faze me, pal. It's how I live. But that doesn't mean I'm just going to walk in and say, okay, here I am, blow me away.
What about the intimidation of people? You say that the mob generally would not kill anyone, an average citizen or a reporter or a broadcaster or a crusading journalist or U.S. attorney. What about an attempt to scare them? What about bombing their car or throwing a brick through their window or stuff like that?
You don't do it. You only create problems when you antagonize these people. I mean, if you got a U.S. attorney, this guy is, I mean, he's got the, he is the government. You're going to start in with the government? You got a newspaper man. You're going to take on a newspaper man? That's like that. You're taking on the entire press. And you sure as hell ain't going to take on cops. What? You know, you got to live with these people.
You mentioned that your first hit when you were 16 years old, you received $5,000. You now get about $20,000, I believe.
That is right.
What, again, I'm just thinking now, if you were running the mob in New York, why pay some guy $20,000 to blow someone off when you could probably get some group of rough guys in New York, let's say young gang thugs, who would do it and enjoy it and get it done a lot quicker?
And
save $20,000.
Also, you would be in jail so fast, sitting right alongside them, you would know what hit you.
So you say, in other words, you pay $20,000 because you get your job done properly.
That's correct. Let me ask you a question. Would you go to a witch doctor to have him treat you for broken ribs?
No.
Okay.
Next question. You've killed 43 men. How many times have you been questioned in those killings? Have you ever been convicted of anything? And what's your record in court?
I have been tried for murder on 3 occasions. I have been acquitted or released. I have pulled up before grand juries asking me questions on 27 out of the occasions. And I have been picked up by the cops more times than I care to count.
Do your witnesses ever disappear?
I never ask what happens to them. I mean, if the state says they have witnesses, you know, that's fine. But when it comes time to produce them, they can't produce them. So I can only assume that they were bluffing.
When you take out or accept a contract on someone, is part of that contract the understanding by the person who hires you that if you are caught, all attempts will be made to make sure that there is no case against you by the state, which may include getting rid of witnesses?
Well, the agreement is that he will take care of all my legal fees and whatever is necessary if I am caught.
And whatever is necessary? In other words, that could be construed as blowing off a witness.
It could be, but not necessarily.
But you've never asked questions in your case.
Would you?
I would ask you that. I don't know whether I'm not in your business, but you make $20,000 a hit, you've made 43 hits, plus you've been involved in other organized crime activities. I would assume that you have made a great deal of money over the years, several million dollars probably.
Yes.
When you file your income tax...
We will not discuss my income tax.
Okay. Would you like to tell us what profession you propose to be or purport to be to them?
No.
Okay. What about... you use a .38 revolver. That's your pet toy. Are there other things that you use in addition to that, or is that the only thing you use?
Is it a .38 or a .32?
Does it have a silencer?
At times I've used them with silencers, yes. And hit 29, the guy I took out, I used a silencer. Now, I've had a lot of so-called gun experts tell me that you cannot put a silencer on a revolver. And I have told them that they are full of bull. Because you take a silencer and you put it on a revolver, and it's an extension of the revolver that extends out about 8.5 inches. And it works very well. Because a lot of people think a silencer can only fit onto an automatic, but it can fit on any kind of a handgun.
When you do muscle work, which you used to do more of than you do now, what did you use when you did your muscle work?
You just used to walk in. Most of the times when you walk in, you grab the guy. He used to see the .38, and he didn't give you too many arguments. Sometimes you might smack a guy in the mouth, you know, or step on his foot. That's about all. I mean, your main purpose to go see the guy is to collect the money, right?
I see. So, in other words, it may just be your presence that will make him pay up.
Oh, yeah.
And it may have to be a baseball bat across the face.
Yeah, sometimes.
Now, in hit 29 would mean, I judge from the title of that book, that you keep track somehow of the people that you blow off.
You just never forget them. I mean, let's face it, they're there. It's something you did.
In the Old West, they would put a notch on their gun. I mean, do you put notches on your gun? Do you have index cards? How do you... You just remember it.
I remember. I got an excellent memory.
Joey, how do you get your contracts?
Well, I am contacted by certain people who know me, who know that certain mobs or people within the mob want a contract, and they will be told to go out and get somebody, and they go get me.
But in other words, you never contact anybody. It's just word of mouth. If they want something done, one of the people they can go to is you.
No, I don't contact anybody at all.
I want to get back to something that we talked about in the beginning of the interview, and that was the smell of fear, the smell of death. You suggested that when you're going to blow someone off, you walk up and you pump 3 shots into their head.
Right.
Is anything ever said? Do they know that it's going to happen? I mean, I'm talking about the second before it happens. Is their reaction? I mean, are they hysterical? Do they attempt to run? Do they plead with you? Do they offer you money? What do they do?
I've had them, turn around and they'll say no and throw their hands up, they'll say anything, you know, just don't do it. As a rule, though, I don't even give them a chance to talk. I just come up and do it. I mean, one guy was brought out to me. They're supposed to bring him out to a field, and when they got him out there, he suddenly realized what was going to happen, and he started to run. I went after him, and as he was running away, and the closer I got to him, he kept screaming, you know, he'd give me anything he had, just don't do it, you know. But once
have you ever let a guy off the hook?
No. No way. I guarantee that contract in my life.
In other words, if you accept a contract and you renege on that contract, you then become the target.
That is absolutely correct.
Dave Fisher, who collaborated with you on the writing of the books, tells an interesting story about someone had mentioned when they were talking about you that you could find just about anybody anywhere in a major city.
Yeah.
And he questioned that, and a friend of his was going to Detroit, and all you knew was the person's name, and you were able to find that person within a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Can you let us know what some of your secrets might be in that area?
Nope.
You just have your own grapevine that will let people know. When talking about organized crime, you really can't talk about organized crime unless you talk about the protection that goes with that. There are those that say organized crime exists in this country today because there are corrupt officials, there are corrupt police departments that allow organized crime to exist. Do you agree with that?
I agree with it, yes, but you left out a very important part.
The people.
Huh?
The people.
That's correct. The people didn't want us. We couldn't be here. They're the ones who want to place their bets. They're the ones who want to borrow money. They're the ones who want narcotics. They're the ones who want prostitution. They're the ones who want stolen goods. And if they didn't want it, we couldn't be here. Now, let me give you an example of it, all right? In New York, they have a very high price for cigarettes because they imposed very heavy taxes on it. So when they started imposing these taxes on it, the public got very annoyed. So we started running cigarettes up from North Carolina. We were giving it to them at almost, from maybe 40% less of what they'd have to pay for in the store. Because all we did, we just went down and we bought them, we paid for them legally, and we shipped them and we brought them in. And the public bought the cigarettes from us because they wanted to, because we saved them the money. Now, here's a racket actually created by the city and state of New York.
How do you feel about the people that suggest that if you legalize gambling, which is the number one, I believe, source of income for the mob, that you would put them out of business or you would really knife into their business?
There's no question of that. And I have maintained for years that if the things that we did were legalized, that the kind of money that would be raised in taxes by the states and the federal government would be unreal. But everybody looks at me like I'm a yo-yo, you know, and yet it's been proven where you have a little country, Monte Carlo? they live very well off of gambling. England is primarily supported by bingo and gambling casinos today. And, you know, and there's no great destitution over there now.
When you take a job, I want to get back to what happens when you get caught or other members of the mob get caught. Do you know when you're taking a job in a certain area or a certain major city that if you get caught, the police will automatically be taken care of and you don't have to worry about anything?
No.
There is no guarantee that way?
No. The guarantee that I got is that if I am arrested, I will have the finest legal representation that is possible. They will do whatever they can and whatever has to be done in order to protect me. I mean, listen, if I fall, I fall.
I want to get back to what you do as a hitman, and I want to talk about the characteristics, not only in your life, but in the other people that you know who kill people professionally for a living. At the time you pull that trigger, you have got to hate, I would assume. When you pull that trigger, do you have reflections of your first wife who died as a result of a beating?
No, I think a lot about her. I think a great deal about her. And when we were doing the second book, Dave and I were talking, and to a degree, you know, I feel maybe I'm killing these guys over and over again. That's a very strong possibility. But when I pull the trigger, I don't think about it. I just do it.
Is there ever any thought about their family?
No, I don't think about it.
None at all. In other words, there's never been any sentimental relationship with anyone you've ever blown off.
No way. You blow them off and that's it, pal. I mean, if I have agreed to take the contract, I'm not worried about sentimentality.
You say there are three things that a man needs to kill.
Right.
The gun, the bullets.
And the guts.
Right. You used another part of the anatomy, but we'll use guts for the radio.
Unless you want me to turn this into a bowling alley.
No, that's all right. I think people got what you're talking about. Are there other things that, other than those three things, you know, you obviously have to be able to, you know, you're taught to do this. You describe that you learned most of your knowledge of weapons when you were in the U.S. Army. The Army, the Marines, a number of agencies of the government, military government, certainly teach people how to kill. Do you think that perhaps, not only in your case, I'm talking about to stop crime in America, if we want street crime, would you say that there should be a period of time before someone gets out of the Army where they untrain people in how to kill people?
No, that wouldn't. I don't think that would do anything.
In other words, you think if a person is going to kill, he's going to kill anyway?
That's right.
Many people think that there's too much violence on television. You're in the most violent profession I can think of. Does violence on television ever offend you?
No, I don't even think about it. I mean, but I find it amusing, especially when they use the violence on TV, and or they try to say, you know, the mob is responsible for this and the mob is responsible for that. And you know, if we were responsible for all the things that they accuse of us, I mean, we'd own the country.
Joey, what about religion in your life? Did you ever have any religious experience when you were young? Was your family involved in religion?
No. They weren't religious people, and I don't believe in it at all.
Not at all.
No.
What about right from wrong? Do you see wrong in what you do?
No, to me it's just a job.
I mean, the taking of another human being's life doesn't affect you in any way?
No.
What about, I know in reading the book, your father also, when you were, he came over to the country, he had some problems. He was involved with a mob when you were growing up.
Yeah.
And two people, Dutch Schultz, I believe, tried to blow your dad off, and he in turn killed two people and eventually went to prison.
Yeah, well, and I found out it was a Dutchman who called the police at him.
Well, do you recall that incident? You were 4 years old. Do you recall the incident when your father went to prison? Is this part of the?
I only went by what was told to me by my father and by his friends. I don't know actually what happened at the incident. I wasn't there. But I do know that the Dutchman did send up some people. My father did put them in a pine box.
What was your early life like on the streets of New York?
Very, very rough.
Well, how rough was it?
Well,
tell us about it.
Hungry, cold, fighting all the time just to survive. You know, stealing food in order to eat.
Have you ever wanted to be anything other than what you're doing now? I mean, if you could be a successful insurance salesman or a lawyer or a doctor or bus driver or whatever, would you like to change what you do?
I would have to say no, because this has been my life. What I could have been or what I would have been is just, you know, conjecture, really, and I wouldn't know how to phrase it. Like once somebody once told me, you know, you could be successful in anything you do, and I said, no, I said, that's not true. I said, you gotta like what you're doing. And I guess I like what I do.
Chris Bogan, a reporter, crime reporter for CBS in New York, in the introduction for Killer, said that you are not called as frequently as you were a few years ago because you yourself are a very heavy bettor and you owe a lot of money, and sometimes when they hire Joey, they do not necessarily get a reliable or a quick or a punctual job.
Well, Chris did that in a way because he was trying to, like, slow me down a little. No, I'm a big gambler, but I don't owe any money from gambling. Because I will not bet unless it's in my pocket. That's number one. Number two, I have never missed a deadline or a time to do something. Chris wrote a very nice foreword, and I appreciate it very much, because Chris and I are good friends. I knew Chris when he was a cop. But he did that because, in his way, he was just trying to, you know, he's been trying to move me out of the business for years.
Once you get the word, how long does it take you to really to get ready? I mean, if you received a call right now after we're through with this interview, how long would it take you to go to that particular area? Let's assume that it's in the United States, and blow that person off.
Well, saying I received the message, what would happen is I would go meet the party who I got the message from. Then he, in turn, would tell me to go meet a certain party at another location. I would go meet with that party. This is not taking maybe 2 or 3 days. He, at that time, would then tell me what they had to do. And then for anywhere between 5 days and 2 weeks after that, the thing would be knocked off.
Do you ever get rush jobs where someone would call and say, listen, I want a guy dead by midnight tonight?
No way would I take it.
Too risky.
He may be in a hurry. I'm not.
You mentioned that you have no remorse or no feeling when you shoot someone, and you said that organized crime generally does not want to blow people off of any prominence. If someone were to call you and offer you whatever the figure is, whatever you ask, it would probably be more than $20,000, to, let's say, assassinate a United States senator or the president of the United States or a foreign dignitary or someone that would cause worldwide news coverage, would you accept that contract?
No.
Why?
Because it's out of my bounds. First of all, I wouldn't trust any man outside of the organization that I was doing business with.
What about if they ordered it? What if they broke all tradition and they ordered it?
I tell them to go do it themselves. Nobody can order me to do anything.
But you would, under no circumstances, accept a job like that.
Correct. I would not.
Your first wife, as we have described, was brutally beaten to death and hemorrhaged and when she was pregnant.
Right.
You are since remarried. Does your current wife know what you do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't discuss, we don't talk business in the house. But let's face it, I've been arrested. I've been tried. Mm-hmm. Cops come to my door.
Do you have children?
No.
If you had children, would you want them to know what you do, or would you be ashamed of what you do?
I'm not ashamed of what I do.
But I'm saying if you had children now, would you want...
Why should I be ashamed of? If I'm not ashamed of what now, why should I be ashamed of with my kids? If I had kids. I got nieces and nephews. They know what I do. Hey, listen, this is what I am. What is there to be ashamed about?
Well, I think each person listening to the show will have an answer to that. I think we all have our own answers, but that is your particular lifestyle. Your lifestyle is different than mine. It's different than the people who are listening, and that's why you're on the program today. We like to share different lifestyles on this program and talk with people who we don't normally get a chance to hear. And certainly a hired killer is one that you don't talk over the back fence with.
Nope.
You talked before about, I want to talk a little bit about your non-hit lifestyle. The image, again, of Hollywood is that organized mobsters are very flashy and they're always out with different women every night and they live a very glamorous life. But you say in Killer that for the most part of the syndicate people you know, they stay home and watch television, and basically they're good family people. And
well, you take care of your family. You got guys that go out bumming, but for the most part, the guys I know, I mean, they take care of their families. They like to stay home. They like to stay out of the limelight. Most of the people that you ever really read about, you know, in the papers and stuff like that, and you are not going to go and as a rule and see them in public places because they avoid them. They don't want to be in them. Because they don't want to be anywhere that's going to create heat. I mean, they like to go out for dinner a couple of times a week, and they'll generally go to quiet, out-of-the-way places.
Joey, I want to ask two last questions. One is, you're with us via long distance today. Is it not conceivable that this call could have been traced and you could be either arrested by now or be dead by now?
Well, no. As far as them arresting me, what have I done wrong? I'm just talking to you on the telephone.
What about the mob?
How are they going to trace the call?
Well, I would assume if they're as powerful as people think they are, they might have the persuasion to do that. You say also that the mob would kill you if they knew that you were talking. Why do you think that? Your book, some people may describe your book as being soft on the mob.
Well, I don't know. But I've violated the rules of the mob by telling people how the organization works. And I think I've done did you read the book through?
Yes, Red Killer.
Yes, I think I have done, in my own way, I think I have done one of the better books on the organization.
I would agree with that.
Right. And I think that this has actually told the people the truth of what we are. We're thieves, there's no question of this. We are out and out thieves. But we are catering to the people who want our services. And that's it.
What would happen if somehow I were to find out who you were and announce it on the air that you were my guest and give your real name? What would happen to me?
I would personally kill you.
Okay. You have my assurance that I will not attempt to do that.
Okay.
Joey?
Yes.
Has been our guest. Joey, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Joey is a hired killer. He is author of two books, Killer, an autobiography of a hitman for the mafia, published by Playboy Press, and also another Playboy Press item, hit number 29, based on the killer's own account.
Killer is mostly in soft cover now by Pocket Books.
Now available in soft cover by Pocket Books. Joey, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, Bruce, thank you.